Wir gerne sehen, was ist los? It's deinen Freundo, Seth. I'm learning German. Yeah, in case you didn't know what that was. That is me trying to impress you with the little German that I know. Right now, I am actually learning German. I took it in high school. I goofed off the entire time. I did some other language learning apps. They taught me things like where the taxi stand is and how to find a bus, but not a lot of conversational German. Thankfully, that's what Babbel is all about. Babbel teaches you language conversationally, which, let's face it, that is what you want to know anyway. I don't know. When I was in school, you learned like how to count. You learned like the colors. You learned the shapes. Those are all important things, but they don't help you when you're in like Cologne, Germany with Ein Nierenstein, which, by the way, is German for kidney stone, an experience I can unfortunately speak personally to. But I've been using Babbel to learn to speak German again, better than I have before. I actually really like it because it is conversational. It's a little bit more relaxed. One of the things that it does that I really like is it'll sometimes show you what the literal English translation is. And I don't know why, but I find that very helpful in sort of understanding the structure, the grammar of a language, and sort of putting myself into that mind space. Since I'm only in Germany for Gamescom, which is like a week, week and a half, I'm not immersed in the German language. I'm not immersed in German culture. So what I do is the second best thing. I'm taking Babbel. Hopefully this year when I go to Germany, I'll be able to impress all the Germans with how much German I know from learning through Babbel. The app has pronunciation recognition, so you'll be able to learn how to speak better with your accent, how to actually properly pronounce the words. That way you won't get made fun of by a group of older German men because you said apple strudel and not Apfelstrudel. No, it's really cool. I'm going to say right now there is a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, because you guys are the best ones, by the way, at babbel.com/realm. Get 60% off at babbel.com/realm. That is spelled babbel.com/realm. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Visible is a wireless carrier that is not invisible. It is pretty clear from the name. Actually, radio waves are invisible. And I can say this with authority as a licensed amateur radio operator. That being said, Visible won't be giving you the power to see light outside the visible spectrum. It's actually way better because having that ability would make getting around very difficult and distracting. What you do get with Visible is unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You get one line of wireless, just $25 a month, which is great in these times of economic uncertainty. That is one line for $25, taxes and fees included. So whatever you're doing at this moment, please stop. Switch immediately. Now, monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Listen.
What is up, Super Ninfriendos? It is Nintendo Voice Chat episode 581. I am your new host, Seth Macy. I am joined here today by Kate McPherson.
Hello.
Sam Claiborne.
Oh, hello.
And industry legend, Cat Bailey.
Well, you can just keep introducing me as industry legend Cat Bailey from now on. I am not going to have my ego inflated at all.
Making a note of that right here. We have a lot of show today because I don't know if you're paying attention, but it was kind of a busy week for Nintendo. So we want to get right into it. We have Kate on here today specifically because she likes the game with the people fighting. I can't remember the name. Oh, Smash Brothers. Huge. Smash Brothers announcement. Sora from Kingdom Hearts has joined Smash Ultimate. This is the final fighter announcement, which in and of itself is unbelievable that they're still, that they were even able to get to this level. We've got new stages.
I can't believe they got Sora's shorts that big. It's just amazing.
Oh, I love them. They're almost
next gen.
Borderline puffy director pants. And it's very cool. So that apparently Sora was the most requested character in the Smash ballot during the Smash 4 era.
Yeah.
Is that how it works? We just needed to vote for somebody else?
Yes,
we needed to vote for Monster Hunter. That's yeah. who I wanted. Or Phoenix Wright. I wanted Phoenix Wright.
Phoenix Wright.
Oh my right. gosh.
Yeah.
Another good one. We also got
another Sword Boy.
Yeah, we got
Spiky, but he has a key. A keyblade's not a sword. Okay. Mm-hmm.
That is mm-hmm. true.
How you hold it.
Kate, I would like to hear your reactions to this announcement.
Yeah. So a little background on me. So I'm Kate. But I am also a competitive Super Smash Brothers player. So I've been going to major events and competing in Smash competitively since 2015. And I'm also a broadcast producer and content creator within the Smash scene. So I've worked with Smash players such as like Hungrybox and like MK Leo and players like that, top players. And I'm very much follow the kind of like the competitive Smash scene and mm-hmm. a lot of people who are very passionate about the game. And I'm very passionate about the game. And seeing Sora as the final character and just the entire final presentation in general was very touching, considering this is the completion of Smash Ultimate, essentially. Right. It's the final character. And yeah, with Sora, ever since Smash 4, when DLC characters were a thing, a lot of people have said they wanted Sora. And I remember when Bayonetta was released as the final character in Smash 4, it was kind of like, okay, maybe we'll have hope for Smash Ultimate. and the fact that I feel like Nintendo was able to even negotiate with Disney to get Sora and get the rights to get Sora into the game, it's definitely something that I think probably took a lot, like a couple years to actually put together and to see, like to kind of close out Smash Ultimate with Sora. It's a very almost like bittersweet kind of ending to Ultimate. I was excited for Sora. I'm not really sure which character I would have preferred. I think I just wanted a character that everyone would be really happy to see in the game. So DLC characters like Min Min and stuff, like some characters were either like the DLC characters that were released may have been more niche or maybe not as easy to pick up, but with Sora, it seems like a lot of people who are really into Smash Ultimate are really happy with this decision from Nintendo to kind of close it out with Sora and close it out with a presentation that we're watching right now in the video form that alludes to like the Smash characters being toys and then bringing it back to welcoming Sora into Smash Ultimate and kind of wrapping it all together into one conclusion after developing Smash Ultimate basically for 3.5 years. And now the game is finally, I think it's technically finished. They're probably still going to do patches. He's free. Exactly.
It's actually a curse that he was under.
Yeah, but it's, I mean, as someone who is a part of the competitive Smash scene, I think a lot of people are really excited to see Sora in the game. I know there's some comments that Sora is, oh, it's another anime sword fighter character or something like that. But as someone who kind of pay attention to how characters are developed and the attacks of characters and things like that, I think yes, Sora has a keyblade and it's kind of like a sword, but I think Sora also has a lot of other unique move sets and
right.
his style of play is very unique. But what's nice is his style is unique, but I think he's a character that compared to other characters like Terry and things like that, he might be easier for players to pick up.
Now, are you a Kingdom Hearts fan? Are you just excited that Kingdom Hearts fans got chocolate in your peanut butter?
I don't want to. I'm afraid to say this, but I've never played Kingdom Hearts.
No, that's totally fine.
Look, it's much worse saying Kingdom Hearts is real dumb, which is I'm willing to say.
Okay. Oh. I have watched
Sam dropping the
NBC
bomb.
At IGN.com if you want to write a harshly worded letter. Yeah,
I don't think it's, I think people really like that series and I respect them for it. I really tried to play a lot of the recent one and I totally get it. I get why people like it. Yeah. It's a little slow for me.
Kate, I think that when it comes to Sora's moveset, I actually agree with you that Sakurai and the Smash Brothers team has shown a lot of creativity when it comes to developing these characters, even when it comes to characters from, like, say, Xenoblade or Byleth, where you're going, it's just another anime sword character. Mm-hmm. Usually they have some kind of really interesting sort of conceit going with a particular character design that helps to differentiate them with from the rest of the characters and end up being really fun. To wit, I am a Byleth main. I have a lot of fun playing as Byleth, and they do not feel like any other Fire Emblem character to me. Mm-hmm. And I was so impressed with how well they implemented Banjo. I know Banjo is not an anime sword boy, but they put so much thought into how these characters represent their individual series, how they fit into Smash Brothers at large. That's why I think Smash is a really special series. That's why I, even though I'm not a big Kingdom Hearts fan, and I was kind of, how should I say, poo-pooing the idea of Sora on Twitter, I am excited to play as Sora because, if anything, I wasn't a big fan of Banjo either until I played Smash and it turned me around on it.
Like on the series?
It's like poo-pooing Sora in Kingdom Hearts or Smash?
No, Banjo. Are you like going back and playing Banjo games?
Neither. I mean, I wasn't a big fan of the original platformers and I thought Banjo didn't hold up super well. Mm. And, you know, I didn't grow up with Banjo. People who are like 5 years younger than me grew up with Banjo and have like really strong feelings about it. So I was like, I'm indifferent to Banjo. But once I started playing as Banjo in Smash, I'm like, this character fits in perfectly. Mm-hmm. It's so well implemented. Top tier DLC character. What an incredible job. 100, 180 on that particular character. And Great I Amiibo think they too. Might do the same with Sora. Great Amiibo too. Yeah.
Yeah. Correct me if I'm wrong. They didn't announce a Sora Amiibo, did they?
I think they're developing it.
Okay.
licensing is so...
Because you know a bad Amiibo is bad forever, but a delayed Amiibo...
Yeah, for sure. I didn't put together the connection that like Smash series has always had to toys, because I know like it's about the toy box in the first game, right? And then I remember in Melee's at the... I haven't really played a lot of Smash since then, but now there's actual physical Amiibo that they tie them to, so it's like this really weird Toys to Life situation now, huh?
Yeah. It's and cool. I think
which is funny because Toys to Life as a genre is dead, but Nintendo's managed to keep Amiibos relevant.
Until now, right? This is the last one for this series.
Yeah. You have suckers like me who are like, I needed both versions of the Cloud Strife that I'll never ever use for anything other than putting it on my shelf and then.
It looks pretty. I got a bunch of Amiibos behind me.
Yeah. They're actually quite lovely little collectibles.
Yeah, but I have my little Amiibos on my desk. So I have a bunch of Smash Amiibos.
My Amiibos are in storage everywhere. At work because I've never taken them out of the packages and I don't have room for them in my house. And so they're in big boxes in storage until we have an office again. And I have a lot of them and they're all in packaging.
I hope they're able to come out and breathe and feel free because, you know, we've seen Toy Story 2. It makes toys mad to live in their packaging.
Yeah. Well, we have the full run in the office, right? So we have all the Amiibo on, Pear's desk wall. And so I was always able to at least scan what I needed. I'd bring my system in and scan what I needed from there. It was a really good resource that it's been tough to be
taken from us. Mm-hmm. Another thing, real quick, with the announcement of Sora coming to Smash, we've also got the Kingdom Hearts series coming to Switch as Cloud games, which I'm a little less than excited about. I would have liked to have seen maybe the earlier games. Kat and I talked about this yesterday, just to see those games maybe just come to a cart or something, because I don't know that I want to be playing that sort of game as a Cloud game. But that will be Kingdom Hearts HD 1.5 plus 2.5 Remix. I'm just reading that how it's written. Kingdom Hearts HD 2.8 Final Chapter Prologue and Kingdom Hearts 3. And I thought that the 3DS one was on there, but I am crazy. But that is Super Smash Brothers' final fighter announcement. October 18th, Sora will be joining. It's bittersweet. It's sad. But hey, now we have like one of the most incredible achievements in video gaming that's never going away. We're always going to have Super Smash Brothers.
What the heck do they even do from here? I can't even imagine.
We're going to be getting to that in question block, but yeah.
I think for now it's, well, I hope Sakurai gets to go on vacation and take a nap,
yes,
because the poor guy has been so busy the past 3 years, 3.5 years since Smash Ultimate's release. Yep. Or not 3.5, 3. But I think now for Smash Ultimate, it's complete. So I think basically whenever the next, I believe it's for every Nintendo console, there's one Smash game. So
you're saying they're never going to release another Nintendo console. They just can't.
This is it.
Can't top. This is it, everybody. I hope you like
Twitch. I mean, the reason forever to upgrade a console, in the future and to have we were talking about this on another show. Like, Nintendo always needs a reason to have a new console, whether it's like we have a new controller we want to put out a console for, or, you know, there's a big leap in television quality. That's something that doesn't motivate them normally. But in the case of Smash, like, I can't imagine a new Smash game not being 4K, not having really, really good power behind it, just to make sure it keeps up with the competitive scene, right? And the needs of people that are playing it. So in that sense, like, we probably should expect that as a reason why Nintendo would have to make a 4K system or a more powerful system in the future.
Yeah.
There's a real Dobby is free energy with Sakurai, and I hope that he does get the break that he absolutely deserves. There was a real heartfelt hashtag trending on Twitter, hashtag thank you Sakurai.
Yeah.
I completely agree with it. That man is one of the hardest working developers in the business. It's incredible. It's funny because I just finished watching the final Evangelion movie last night, and it was the same thing kind of with Hideaki Anno. It's like, I've devoted my life to this particular show for 25 years at this point. Sakurai has been with Smash almost as long.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Anno kind of is ready to take a break and step away. Like, he's going, Evangelion is complete. Maybe Smash is complete. Maybe this is where Sakurai goes, now I explore other ideas and I'm not shackled to this series that is amazing. But God, as a creator, I want to do something else.
Mm-hmm. Except for every time he goes out in public, someone's going to be like, where's Goku?
I would have.
Goku was never going to be a thing. He was
I don't know why people thought Goku was going to be in Smash. Like, I don't know.
Wishlisting.
I partially expected them to like drop the guy from Fortnite in for the last character, but that would have cost.
He was in guy. That would have been horrible.
Fortnite Jonesy.
Oh my God.
I was really, when I saw the leaks that it was Sora, a part of me, honestly, I said to my friends who were really into Smash 2, I said, I would be really content, or I would be really happy if Waluigi was the final character in Smash Ultimate.
Wow. I would too.
It would have been positive feels, because there have been so many comics over the years of Waluigi being left out, everybody else getting the letter except for him, and he's still not in.
That's Waluigi. Insane that Waluigi is not in this game.
That's a
spirit trophy. That does not count. It does
count.
Unfortunately.
No. I hate it.
That's when we get the Pro Switch and we have Super Smash Brothers Pro.
We're just doing our top 100 Nintendo 64. What was it? Yeah, top 10 Nintendo 64 games. We kind of like resurrected this list for the 25th anniversary. And I had the charge of picking, something to say about Mario Party 3. And Mario Party 3 is Waluigi's first Mario Party game. And people like it for that. They like it for a few other reasons, just because it has more of everything. A lot of people like 2, though. Those are basically tied with our staff. But Mario Party 3 has a level that's Waluigi's level, and it shows, like, you know, his mind, his mental state. It's incredible. It's just this purple, disgusting mess.
I love it.
And it's full of traps.
Waluigi exemplifies how memes come to life and take on a life of their own, because... Yeah. Originally, I feel like the fandom around Waluigi was wholly ironic. People were like, Waluigi is such a stupid character that we're going to like him despite everything. And then he became memetic.
Yep.
And then those memes became their own thing. And that's how we get to people being genuinely upset that Waluigi is not in Smash Brothers.
Yeah, as somebody who paid the $25 to get a vanity plate in the state of Maine that says Waluigi, I'm fully heartbroken that he's not.
Well, I'm sorry Waluigi explained Mario Party 3 to you just now.
That's totally fine. I would get the late, but it's too far away, and we need to talk about something that I'm extremely excited.
This year I decided I actually wanted to like follow hockey a little bit more than just the most casual of casuals. So I subscribed to a service that streams all of the NHL to your television. The Boston Bruins home opener, I went to watch it and boom, blackout restrictions apply, which I thought was kind of ridiculous because I'm still 200 miles away from Boston, but whatever. Had I had NordVPN, that wouldn't have been a problem. I would have just gone in, changed my settings to another geographic area, and boom, I could have been watching all the Boston Bruins home games like it was nothing at all. So now I have NordVPN, and I can watch the home games of my local teams streaming without being frustrated. It's the same thing with like Netflix. It has all these complicated licensing rules, which from one country to another don't really make sense. So something you could watch on South Korean Netflix, you won't be able to watch on the United States Netflix unless NordVPN, boom, switch to South Korea, and you're watching whatever Korean drama that you want. I highly recommend you do that. I haven't done it myself, but people seem to enjoy them. And who am I to try to bring down people's enjoyment? NordVPN, more than just entertainment and sports availability, it's going to protect you, especially when you're traveling, when you're using public Wi-Fi. People are trying to get in there. They're creeping on you. Bad actors, people trying to steal your password, your bank account details. Who knows what the government's doing these days? I can't keep track. They're all over the damn place. NordVPN, it's going to protect you. It's going to protect up to 6 devices because I know you have at least that many devices in front of you right now that can hook up to the internet. Boom. Fastest VPN in the world. You're not going to get any buffering. You're not going to get any lagging. It's going to stop your ISP from bandwidth throttling, which they do. That's kind of sneaky, especially how much you're paying those guys. There's threat protection to protect you from viruses and malicious malware and whatever else. Unsavory actors are out there. If you want to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/NintendoVC. That's nordvpn.com/NintendoVC. Victor Charlie. That link is also going to give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There is no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nice of them, and I appreciate that.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
About, and that is a little game that Sam reviewed for us called Metroid Dread. Sam, So I hear this Metroid Dread is a pretty okay game.
It's really good. I think I called it amazing. I am I'm a huge Metroid fan. My favorite Metroid games, to put people in context, are Zero Mission, and then which was just for GBA and a remake of the first game, and then Prime. And this is kind of a mix of those games. One thing that I really like about Zero Mission, and Fusion has this too, is that by later in the game, you're like solving these puzzles that are like these kind of like twitchy, insane, boosting, reaction jumping puzzles. Like you see a thing that you should not be able to get, and you just think like, oh, I must have to get that later with a power up that I don't know about. And then by the end of the game, you're like, well, no, I could have got that this whole time. I just didn't know how to do it. I love that feeling because that means I can play it again now and get a bunch of stuff early and kind of figure out how to do puzzles that I didn't realize, I could do. That's my favorite type of Metroid.
Right.
So that's Zero Mission to me. And then the Prime side of it is that this game just looks great. Nintendo's like, at the top of its game with this, like, it's a, 2D plane to play on, but it's 3D built. It looks so good. And we were kind of talking about Smash. I mentioned Smash in my review. It has so many moves you get by the end of the game that are focused on combat that you have enemies that are more like Samus than like big bosses, and you fight them in these kind of twitchy fighting game ways. And
that's
that's awesome.
It was really hard, but it was really satisfying to figure out what I was doing and I just had to get good. I love that feeling.
Yeah.
I heard that the bosses are really hard in this game, Metroid Dread is a cut above in terms of difficulty. Fair to call this the most difficult Metroid game?
Well, no, because I think Metroid is the most difficult Metroid game because it doesn't tell you how to do anything.
I'd be surprised if it's the earlier.
But from a Twitch standpoint, like, yeah. I mean, you could always pick up a copy of Nintendo Power. That's what those games were made for,
right,
in some ways. But right, yeah, with this one, like, the bosses are really involved.
Yeah, so the thing that I kind of called out that I didn't like about bosses is that it's really focused on the counters. So you've seen in this footage that we're showing now, if you're watching the video version, you have a little window to counterattack any enemy. And it starts with like a very obvious counter in the beginning of the game. And as the game progresses, like those counters get much more difficult, right? Because everything gets more difficult. And bosses kind of have the boss sequences. Like, you guys know what boss sequences are, I'm sure, if you've played games for 30 years or something, but I don't know if contemporary people will recognize this much, but like, you know, a boss might go through a stage of like sending missiles at you for a while and then might turn into a cannonball and roll around. Right. Yeah. And then after that, they might, you know, sprout spider legs and a missile launcher and then have a final sequence. To get between those sequences in Metroid, you have to do one of these counters just right, and sometimes a QTE event. So it's like counter, ooh, counter, 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 right? That's hard to do, only if you don't know what you're doing next, right? So you kind of have to replay bosses and learn those sequences after the spongy sequences. That's not everything, but why I didn't like that specifically, and I don't, and again, like, I love these boss fights. I think they're really great, but it made it so I spent all this time backtracking and collecting, so I had like a huge stock of ammo. Right, that's what you do in Metroid. You expand your ammo capacity, but that doesn't matter if like all you're doing is waiting for a counter attack. Right, you're waiting for a QTE. It's not. It's hard to tell if the damage matters, and I put that to the test on the hardest boss, I think, by just using my regular like crappy little beam weapon, and it took about the same time to get through that boss fight.
Oh, really?
That didn't mean I didn't have to learn how to dodge so many attacks. Like, movement had to be perfect. And learn all this other stuff, but it's just not as much about attacking as it is these other things. So that's new for Metroid and awesome, but a little disappointing for like the collectathon spirit that I go for in Metroid.
Now, did you play
the movement? Is incredible. Sorry, go ahead, Seth.
I was just going to ask if you played in handheld or with like the pro controller. Did you switch back and forth?
Yeah. So I reviewed the last Metroid: Samus Returns and really had a problem with the tight shoulder button placement on that system and fighting bosses, because you have to usually hold a shoulder button or two and do things, and like on that system it felt like crap. On the Switch it feels a lot better. The Pro Controller I absolutely would just switch over to if I had to do I won't mention the power up, but there's certain puzzles that are tied to this one power up that you get that are just really gameplay intensive. I'd switch to it for that, and then I'd switch to it for boss fights without fail. Like, I would just go just because I wanted to get, also, like, you know, I was feeling competitive and I wanted to get through this game and make sure that, like, I, you know, was kicking butt. So, you know, you could do this. You could play this game on a plane. There's nothing stopping you. And I played the entire 3DS game just fine. It just was a hassle.
Right. Are you playing on a Switch OLED?
No, I wasn't. But we have a review of the Switch OLED this week. And the person that reviewed that, Taylor Lyles, contributed to my review a box out of playing Metroid on that system. So you can read that take in the art.
Oh, I'm really excited to see it. I'm curious because Metroid Dread is kind of billed as the final game in the Metroid saga. That doesn't mean the series is over. It just means that that particular arc is finished. And I'm wondering, as a longtime Metroid fan, does it wrap things up in a satisfying way without going into spoilers?
Well, let me just summarize the ending. No. I can't wait for everybody to play it, first of all. Like, I can't wait to talk about it because I actually think it's going to be something that people talk about in a range of ways.
I can't wait.
It's crazier than I expected, and I think that most people would expect, but it's not obnoxious, in my opinion.
That's what I was going to ask. Is it a satisfying kind of?
Sure. Okay. I think the thing that's tiring Metroid out is taking away Samus's equipment at the beginning of every game and figuring out a way to explore a place that has, you know, perfectly spaced out Chozo upgrades and fit that into a story. Like, none of that fits into a story really for me. So like the Metroid story, you know, if it's going to be about you know, Samus versus this existential threat of in the universe, whatever that is. That's kind of like that itself is going to get tired out. So like what I would like is, you know, Metroid Prime completely spun out from that, right? It was like it did have Metroids in it, but like it's a completely separate timeline series, not timeline in that sense, but like it's hard to say it's self-contained compared to these five main games. Now, what do they do after this? Well, like Samus is a bounty hunter. I'd rather hear more about maybe that, or, you know, have another protagonist or something. Like it's going to be hard to keep on running Samus through this same race, right?
Here's my pitch. Samus is fully powered up at the beginning of the game, but as the game progresses, she slowly gets depowered, loses her powers throughout the end until the very end, where she's desperate and wounded. And it's a little got that little bit of that alien thing going on.
Right.
Truly lean into the survival horror element as you take away their powers rather than making them superpowered.
That's a fantastic idea.
I would love that.
And Zero Mission did a little bit of that. Sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to ask, because it's been many years since the last Metroid game. Would you say Metroid Dread was definitely worth the wait?
Yeah, I kind of make light of this in my review. You're hitting the nail on the head. Like it's worth the wait since 2003. You know, that's the wait. There was a remake in Samus Returns, and you know, gave that a high score, an 8.5. Mm-hmm. This is a really remarkable new Metroid game. And I feel like I said that I felt a little bit robbed that this wasn't out in the early 2000s. So we would have had like a pattern of cool Metroid games to come. Yeah. I feel like robbed of 20 years of great Metroid. I feel that same way about Castlevania, by the way, 100%. Okay. Like, I'm just like, I wish there was a Castlevania every year until like 2000, whatever, five, or every 2 years. And it was like, I would play those every year because they're a Metroid style Castlevania game. And I really like this type of game. And it really took indies to carry on the tradition recently. With Ori and Hollow Knight and Axiom Verge and stuff like that. I think it's great that they're doing that, but it's really great that Nintendo came back and made like a cool AAA Metroid game in 2D plane. Like it feels like Super Metroid, you know, it's like really, really cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Does this fill the gap that we have in all of our hearts for Metroid Prime 4?
Prime 4?
I know it's obviously, it's a completely different kind of game, but it is still Metroid. And
yeah, I mean, I'm worried about that too. Like, can Metroid 1, Prime 1, 2, and 3, like, that, you know, 2 and 3 didn't add a whole lot to that. Like, Prime is, I mean, some days it's my favorite game ever.
Yeah.
I think
I'm right there with you.
So wonderful. Yeah. But it was, you know, it's the first time I experienced that. And I don't know if that's the magic can be recaptured. I think they did a good job with this, though. So maybe that indicates it can. But man, I also remember Metroid Prime was like, that was like when that came out, when Half-Life 2 came out, and like people argued about which game looked better. Like, that's amazing that Nintendo had the best console on the market for graphics and showing off this big first person game. Like, that is kind of a component of why Metroid Prime worked for me. I don't anticipate that coming back. So that's why this Metroid type Prime, of Metroid works.
Metroid Prime's art direction was just top tier back in the day. And man, music. Back in 2003, like, I think we did the GameCube retrospective back in the day when Metroid Prime came out. I don't think there was anything that looked better on any other console. It was just unbelievable on the GameCube. Yeah.
And I know, I think Breath of the Wild approached that in its own way, because graphics don't have to be about textures, right? They can be about the composition of what you're looking at. Yeah. And there's scenes in Breath of the Wild which are as beautiful as anything ever. So that's what I think, like, you know, I think another step for Nintendo is getting a little bit more fidelity so it looks good on my television, because everybody is adapting new televisions, and Metroid looks really good on my little screen and it looks really good on the television, but it's absolutely fuzzy on a 4K television. Mm. And you can see, like, there's so much asset here. It's like, there's so much stuff that it's like, okay, well, just a sharper version of this would be absolutely welcome. Like, I can't imagine that we won't have that in a couple of years.
Yeah, no, I maintain the belief that Metroid Prime 4 will be the big launch game that comes with the next Nintendo 4K console.
Well, I hope it's not Breath of the Wild 2, because I can't wait.
So it's
going to
be Switch Pro.
The Switch Pro.
Switch Pro. Long awaited Switch Pro.
Smash Pro.
Mm-hmm. I'd be into it.
I think we're getting into the probable next gen games here, because some games are going to require better graphical fidelity, just a little bit more though. Like, I mean, I'm totally with people that are saying like PlayStation 5 games don't look that much different than PS4. But like Switch games look different than PS4 and PS5.
Shouted down for even suggesting anything less than the most powerful console.
You look at Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, that game looks phenomenal still. Yeah. Like it's all about how you use the tools at hand and the art direction. I think that raw graphical fidelity actually matters less than ever. I mean, just look at the top most popular games. They're not showcase games. Nobody's going to call Fortnite a showcase game.
I agree, but I do want it to fit my monitor. That is important to me. Like I just want to use the pixels. Like I don't care. Like the game Metroid should look exactly like this. I don't want it to look different, but I also don't want to feel like I'm stretching it on my TV. It just has a weird effect. Now I'm also noticing that in Castlevania on Switch, the Game Boy screen looks so funny and blocky and chunky to me now, compared to a Super Nintendo, you know, or something like that. Like I'm just not used to it. It is funny to see.
It is,
and it's charming to see those low-res graphics on the Switch screen.
Yeah. I noticed that in Harmony of Dissonance, the second one, because Circle of the Moon was famously just so dark and unplayable that they turned the contrast up like to astronomical levels, and you really see it on a 55-inch screen. It's like it's almost too much for my poor eyeballs.
They turned the contrast up so it's like chiaroscuro, like light and dark are really, really up, or is
it's
it like
just the vibrance of it? I mean, it's that's what they did on the Game Boy Advance, just
so you can see the reflected
screen better. But on a giant backlit, you know, 4K TV, it's like, good lord, what is happening here? This is like the most it's easily the most vaporwave of the Castlevania games. So, but we'll get to that when we're what we've been playing. But there's a little bit of Nintendo news this week, a little more Nintendo news, I should say. Mm-hmm. That is that we finally got the announcement of the announcement. Animal Crossing New Horizons Nintendo Direct is coming next week on Friday at 7 a.m. Pacific.
Oh,
we might have to push recording back next week.
Probably a day at least. Yeah,
probably a day at least. I'm sorry in advance. But,
you can just change the clock.
That's a great joke. That's such an
excellent
joke.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
We're getting the roost.
Yes,
you know, it can't be 20 minutes of roost.
You'd be surprised.
Speak for yourself.
Yeah, I guess I wouldn't be surprised. It could be 20 minutes of roost.
I mean, they data mine
every
Brewster,
new
brand
coming.
They data mine Brewster last year. This has been more than a year in the making. It's just like finally,
like 20 minutes of your character like sipping on coffee, and
I'm into it.
And just
the mood I need.
Typing away on that novel on their MacBook. Just typing away on
it. You have to unlock all the blends. It's like Kona and Ghana and Costa Rica.
Oh my God, I would do that.
Seriously. You have to build it, right? Or something like
that. Oh, I hope so. If there's anything that I really want out of this Animal Crossing expansion, it's something to spend my many, 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 many bells on. And that would be the ability to build new permanent structures on my island would be marvelous.
Yeah, or to build out the coffee shop, I think would be more interesting to me than the
wing of the museum is the thing that kind of bums me out.
Yeah, I'm worried about that. But the paintings and the statues were like too much. Like there's just like, you know, would take so long to finish that wing that I hope it's something that's more gamey, like the fish and bug collecting, which I love so much.
I'm not enough of a maniac to go after every one of those paintings.
It's tough.
Are all of you still playing Animal Crossing?
No. But I don't know. Maybe I kind of go through periods of really getting into it and for maybe like a week or two, and then I kind of like put it away, and then a couple months later I pick it up again.
I'm too afraid to go back. I just put it down for a month. I'm like, I don't want to go weeding.
You'll find your animals, they'll be like haunted, and we're like, there was no village here. There never was.
Or you get all these letters of like villagers that were on your island and they're like, I'm leaving. Like, sorry.
Yeah, I don't want passive aggressive comments from cute little animals about how I've been gone. I'm like, guys, I have a busy life.
You'll find out that the squirrel whose name I forget, is just taken over the town, has anointed himself king. You have to fight him, destroy him. That'd be a great expansion.
Yeah, maybe I'll go back and play.
I'm still playing. I have been on and off, but I have a I have nephews that are very into Animal Crossing suddenly, which is great. And my family lives in Iceland, and so I don't really get to interact with them very much. And I did not know
that. I thought that was a goof for half a second there.
No. And the Switch Online, and we pull up the video chat and Switch Online, and it works so well. Like I've spent last Saturday, I think I was fishing for 3 hours. And, with, 6 year old who just was so into it and kind of explaining how it works and stuff, because I'd worked on the guide and everything and can happily do that. But that was a really good Animal Crossing bonding experience. And that ain't going away because they're obsessed. So I'm definitely back in it now. Awesome. To get presents to bring and stuff, Yeah. Gotta be a good uncle.
I love my island so much. I put so much work into making it perfect. And when I go back and I weed it and I say hi to all of my animal friends, it will be like going home. It's my happy place.
Yeah. Home, but there's cockroaches.
Yes. Step on them. They will die. And it's okay.
That was my original plan was I just wanted to have the most garbage filled house because you can get trash. And so I had a dump. And then I saw somebody else online had done every piece of garbage that you could furniture you could get, and it was just actually the landfill for Manhattan Island. It was just
because
incredible.
There's landfill wallpaper and carpet.
Have the landfill wallpaper. It's amazing.
Perfect. Can I just say that the landfill wallpaper stresses me out, from a personal sense? I can smell it. It's horrifying.
Yeah. Really gross.
Yeah. I spent most of my time.
That's what Nintendo's waiting for the new Switch. They want to have the interactive scents.
No, God, no smell-o-vision.
No.
I was going to say, I spent a lot of my time actually making outfits for my character.
Excellent.
I didn't mention this in the beginning, but I play Ganondorf in Smash Ultimate. And I'm
you're terrifying.
Except I'm one of the worst characters in the game, but it is what it is. I saw the Sora thunder attack in the direct and I cried as a Ganondorf main. I was just there's nothing I can do. Anyways, but I made a Ganondorf dress and all this stuff. And I would make really themed outfits for my character. That was something I spent a lot of time on.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that game definitely just hit at the right time.
Yeah, sure did.
Kind of want to, I don't know, I'm too afraid.
I reviewed
feel bad
it.
That I haven't been there. Even though they're not real, none of those animals are actually alive. I still feel guilty about
I finished half of that review in the office and the other half at home because that was right when things switched over.
Oh yeah,
it was my VO in the office, and then I came home and I did the rest of my capture at home, and it was super weird.
It was PAX East that year was when we all got to play it. That was the last event that any of us have been to was PAX East 2020.
And and I was playing Animal Crossing at that event for the review.
I remember. I was
just walking around the halls. No,
I didn't get you. Yeah, they had that great. Anyway, we'll move on to that was a Animal Crossing Direct is coming up next week on Friday, 7 a.m. Pacific. So set your alarms or just move to the East Coast like me, because that's 10 o'clock and I'm way awake. Yeah. Oh, Maine is beautiful.
East Coast. I'm in New Jersey. So.
That's right.
Yes.
I forgot about that.
I'm one of the handful of people at IGN. They're from New Jersey, or at least lived in that area.
Yeah. All of you let us know during meetings when you're all together that you're from New Jersey.
When we brought up, I remember we talked about, it was the gas station simulator. And in that simulator, you, as the owner, pump gas for people. And we said, is this a New Jersey gas station simulator? Yes,
for those who don't know, in New Jersey, you don't pump your own gas. It is.
Oregon.
Yes, I was just going to say, it's the same as in Oregon. But maybe that'll be the next Animal Crossing expansion. Now, let's talk about what we have been playing this week. I mean, we kind of already know with Sam, but Sam, what have you been playing? Anything outside of Metroid Dread?
Yeah, I mentioned I'm also playing Castlevania. I skipped straight to Aria of Sorrow. If that doesn't draw me in, then I figure it's probably not time for me to revisit these games. But it's already drawn me in a little bit, and it does look blocky and funny compared to how I remember it on a more crunched screen. I was talking to Pear about this. He's like, I'm just going to play it on my micro with my cartridge if I'm going to play it again. I'm like, that's a great way to play it. I love that it has rewind and save states. Yes. and then everything feels great with it. The one thing that's driving me crazy right now is I switched the button layout. So it was whip is the closest to me and jump is on the bottom. I'm just used to that. It feels more like an NES controller, a Super NES controller for me. Mm-hmm. But when you do that, it means that the menus are like so screwed up. Yeah. You can't, you know, they have like everything is backwards in the menus after that. So I'm trying to get my head around that right now, especially after playing Metroid, where I'm like, you know, when you go from one game to a next and they're kind of similar and they have different controls. That's what we all did with Assassin's Creed and Red Dead. And what happens is you punch your horse in the face all the time.
Yes.
That's the ride button in Assassin's Creed.
Or you end up murdering
somebody. You punch
somebody
else's horse. Yeah, you get murdered.
Yeah, exactly.
Kat, what have you been up to this week?
Well, I've been kind of waiting for Metroid Dread before jumping back on my Switch and playing a little bit of Eastward. But in the waiting period, I've been... Sorry, Nintendo Switch. I've been playing a lot of FIFA. I've been back on my nonsense. And so
I think FIFA's on Switch.
It is on Switch, kind of after a fashion. We've been getting increasingly brutal with our reviews of FIFA on Switch for obvious reasons, because EA got their money from Nintendo. And then after a couple iterations, they're like, well, anyway, we're done. Legacy Edition right here. And it's true. Nintendo... Like, we're now basically two generations clear of the version of FIFA that is on Nintendo Switch. So there was no way that they were ever going to be able to get that game onto the Switch absent a cloud version. Mm-hmm. So whatever, I'm fine. But FIFA is a deeply stressful game, and I wish I weren't playing it, but here I am again every single year.
Wow. I wish you nothing but the best of luck.
Who do you main in FIFA?
I play Ultimate Team, so yes, I'm one of those people, but when I'm playing just regular online, I like to play as Napoli in Serie A, because they aren't ridiculously OP, but they are quite pacey and quite fun. And also, they have really pretty sky blue uniforms, and I want to go to Naples someday.
Oh, Napoli. Molto bella.
Do we call FIFA fans FIFA?
I will accept that designation. Okay. I am a FIFA. Cat the FIFA.
That's looking upset. Well, at least we can agree that it's pronounced FIFA, right?
FIFA, yeah. That is a main thing where we put we lose the R where there is an R and we put it at the end where there isn't one. So
No, that's a British thing I was referring to. I didn't realize
you were making fun of mine.
You're so close
by. I'm a FIFA.
It is New England after all.
Like, it is.
Yeah, if you take a pen and you make a picture of somebody with it, that's a drawing.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Well, my wife used to make fun of me all the time about that.
Let's talk more about regional accents. I'm from Minnesota. That's what I do.
Yeah, well, you could have a stronger Minnesotan accent than that, right?
Oh, yeah, I can.
It's possible.
Oh, yeah.
There it is.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Kate, what have you been playing?
Yeah, I have, I didn't 100% Hades, but I pretty much got almost everything. The one thing I'm missing, like I have the ranks and stuff. I love playing Hades just as a game to like zone out and like before I go to bed, I kind of just fall asleep too. I think the one thing I don't have is like some very rare fish that you can only find in, I believe it's like Chaos's level and like the possibility of finding it is very, very small. So I just kind of gave up. But I picked up, I've been playing Hollow Knight.
Nice. And
yeah. Never played it before, but I was really feeling, I don't know, I heard really good things about it. And I was in the mood for kind of that dungeon crawler sort of Metroid-esque sort of game. And there it is. It is, it's definitely difficult.
What is this DLC? This is not the
Hornet DLC.
150 new enemies.
Oh, wow. But yeah, I've been playing Hollow Knight and I've been really, really enjoying it. I love the boss fights. I love the art style. I love the music. It's really, really fun.
I'm also playing Hollow Knight right now and I'd never played it before. I'm I'm deep into the game now. I don't have a lot to go. It's very, very hard at points for me. And the boss fights are part of that. Also, I totally went out of sequence a couple of times and I had to use our guide for it. Because was just trying to do something I shouldn't have been doing yet. And then I look up the strategy and it's like, well, you should be using this to dodge this attack, and use this to dodge this attack. I'm like, I have neither of those things. But again, I like a game that lets me do that. Like I respect a game that lets me do that.
Yeah. Or it's like you can't get to a certain area because you need to get like this like ability level up. And it's like, oh, that's why I couldn't get across, like things like that. But I've been really enjoying Hollow Knight a lot. And I didn't know that there was a DLC coming.
I didn't either.
Really awesome to see, actually. Go.
Because this this character, when you fight her, it's really difficult. Like, there's some scenes where you have to fight this character. And
it's
not just like a DLC. It's practically a sequel from what able to gather with Silkskong. Like, I think it's being treated as a standalone release. Please correct me if I'm wrong. I think Hollow Knight is an amazing game, and it's set a new standard for Metroidvanias. And it's kind of the elephant in the room when it comes to Metroid Dread. Because you can see everything gets compared to Hollow Knight now if it's in that particular genre. Yeah. And Hollow Knight is so gorgeous and so well designed. Yeah. And the combat is so immaculate. And it has such a mood that it is really difficult to match.
And it doesn't use the same upgrades and movements and stuff like that. Whereas, like, you know, Metroid's kind of locked in that. So I love Metroid and want to play Metroid games. And but the innovation is never going to be there because Samus is always going to have an arm cannon, right? Like, it would be unusual for Samus to pick up a sword. But this game feels really different because everything's predicated on a completely different way of interacting with enemies and levels.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I think this is a 10. I think Tom reviewed this and gave it a 10. So it's one of the best games out there. But I've been playing, like Sam, I've been playing the Castlevania Advance Collection. I've been doing them chronologically. Jared Petty told me that I was wrong for doing that.
What was his order? Because he also likes Castlevania.
No, his order was
Game Boy,
just to play Aria of Sorrow. And he said and this is an exact quote. It's one excellent Castlevania games, two mediocre Castlevania games, and one horrible Castlevania.
I mean, he's not wrong. Aria of Sorrow.
That was exactly my thought process, too. So I completely agree with this.
Circle of the Moon, I thought was great. I never played all the way through it, and I had a lot of fun playing it. So I'm looking forward to getting to Aria of Sorrow, because I also never played that one. It's not like the DS ones. I played all of those, and I love those.
Any of you play Circle of the Moon on the OG GBA? Because, I mean, we were talking earlier about how bad the lighting was in that game and how impossible it was to see. But unless you actually played it on a launch GBA, you really can't. It was that dark. It was actually practically unplayable in anything but direct sunlight.
Yeah. I think
vampire game. Somebody's made
ironic,
that
right?
I'm sure. But
remember Boktai, where you had to take it out?
Yes.
Yeah, it was a good way to get your daily dose of vitamin D. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Kojima.
Yeah, it prevents rickets. Thank you, Hideo Kojima, the enemy of rickets. I also played a game called Steel Assault, which is also on Switch. And I have a review. It's been out since like last week. And I liked it, needless to say. It's maybe one of the most beautiful. Like, it's an arcade style, side-scrolling, like, shooter / beat 'em up. It's sort of Metal Slug meets
I'm listening,
my attention has been peaked.
I don't want to spoil my review, but my biggest problem with this is it's so short because it's so beautiful and I had such a fun time that I just wanted to keep playing it, and you end up, but it's the soundtrack is just like the chunkiest riffs that you can also turn to FM synth if you want to, so then you get like the amazing chunky riffs in a chiptune form. And but like pixel art alone, like, it's a 10. It's one of the most beautiful pixel art games that I have ever seen. And you should probably check it out if you get a chance. And then my written review will be up one of these days. A lot of other things have been happening in the world of gaming. So we have time for question block. And I'm very excited about question block because there are some good questions that we touched on earlier. This is from, please forgive me, I'm going to try to pronounce this name properly, Nishan Rudra Kumar. Asks, with the final character reveal for Smash Ultimate now behind us, where does the franchise go from here? No one knows. That.
It's over.
I mean, we answered that, but
can I comment?
Yes. Of course.
Yeah. Well, I can definitely say, and I'm going to get a little bit like competitive Smasher for a second, but definitely as someone who, considering like what's the future for Smash Ultimate moving forward, especially with competitive Smash where online or in-person events are just now coming back, but now it's like Smash Ultimate is complete after being online for a year and a half, and it feels like the storylines of competitive Smash have like only just started to really develop right now. So if you're still interested in developments in Super Smash Bros. Ultimate and interested to see developments of character play styles and things like that, I highly recommend watching competitive Smash tournaments or competitive Ultimate tournaments, because I think that really gives a chance for people to see their favorite characters played at a high level. Granted, a lot of players will choose characters that are considered better in the game. We're not sure where Sora lies in terms of the tier list yet until you really like get your hands on him once he's released. But I want to say, if because we're not sure where Smash goes, and I know I said earlier that usually there's one Smash game per console, but with Smash Ultimate being considered complete, I really see that in the competitive Smash area, that's where there's still developments, there's still stories, there's still discoveries with characters and discoveries with the DLC characters and things like that. And that's where I really see more developments coming up, and it's really exciting.
How is Smash Brothers Ultimate standing as a competitive game in your mind? Because I think the stereotype among a lot of people is that Melee is still a thing. The community never fully moved on. People kind of tend to downplay the newer games like Ultimate. I think Ultimate was supposed to be in the Evo tournament and things like that. But what's your take?
So I would definitely say, so Melee and Ultimate are definitely the most popular Smash games competitively. Smash 4 is definitely not. People don't really play it anymore. If anything, if it is at tournaments, it's like a fun side event. Brawl, people don't really play anymore. Smash 64, again, they still sometimes hold brackets, but it's usually Melee and Ultimate are the main games. And something I really hope for the next Smash game is that they put in rollback net play rather than delay based, because when you have, part of the reason why I think competitive Smash Ultimate really took a pause during the pandemic when in-person events were not really happening, playing online, especially like playing competitive Smash Ultimate online, was awful. Like it, you felt like you were playing in quicksand, and it really wasn't that enjoyable for people who were so used to playing in person. And with Melee, I'm kind of giving like a short rundown, but with Melee, they developed a system called Slippy where Melee players could go online and there was rollback net play, and it was really revolutionary. So a lot of people went back to Melee. And
whoa, that's really interesting.
Yeah. And Melee almost had this is what amazes me about Melee so much. It always seems to have this resurgence every couple years. It's like, oh my God, is Melee dying? Are people not interested? And then somehow it just comes back to life. And during the when in-person events were not a thing, Melee really came back. And now we have all these new Melee players and new storylines. And it's been really amazing to see. But with Ultimate, it's definitely, I won't go too much into it because it's kind of a deeper conversation, but there isn't as much developer support from Nintendo for Ultimate. And if there is, it's very limited. So compared to League of Legends and Dota and things like that, Ultimate, definitely you're not making millions of dollars winning, like placing seventh at like a Smash Ultimate tournament, but it's definitely still, it gets a ton of views on Twitch. A lot of people are very interested in the competitive Smash Ultimate, and especially with seeing the new characters and develop the storylines with competitive Smash Ultimate are still developing. And I think that's what's been giving it its legitimacy as we come back into having in-person events again.
Nice.
Definitely a struggle.
I have to end the conversation because we are out of time. And I hate to say
it. Asking the post show. It's about the Nickelodeon Smash game.
Oh my gosh.
It's been so fun. Sorry to say we are out of time for this week's NBC, but I want to thank Kate, Sam, and Kat, industry legend Kat Bailey, for joining me today. If you want to
come back around.
Yeah. You want to submit your own questions? Write us at NBC@IGN.com or respond to our weekly question block post on Nintendo Voice Chat podcast forums on Facebook. Thank you so much for watching. And remember, NBC is the only place where you can
get the thing.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.